My grandfather was a Foundation man. Won't you take me there sometime, Poochie? Stetton smiled at the thought. Perhaps he would, as conqueror. The good nature that the thought supplied him with made itself felt in his words. I will, I will. And you can see the girl and talk Foundation to her all you want. But not near me, understand? I won't bother you, honestly. I'll have her in my own rooms. She was happy again. It was not very often these days that she was allowed to have her way. She put her arms about his neck, and after the slightest hesitation, she felt its tendons relax and the large head come softly down upon her shoulder. Chapter 13. Lady. Arcadia felt triumphant. How life had changed since Peleus Anthor had stuck his silly face up against her window, and all because she had the vision and courage to do what needed to be done. Here she was on Calgan. She had been to the great central theater, the largest in the galaxy, and seen in person some of the singing stars who were famous even in the distant Foundation. She had shopped all on her own along the flowered path, fashion center of the gayest world in space. And she had made her own selections, because Homier just didn't know anything at all about it. The saleswoman raised no objections at all to long, shiny dresses, with those vertical sweeps, that made her look so tall. And Foundation money went a long, long way. Homier had given her a 10-credit bill, and when she changed it to Calganian Calganids, it made a terribly thick sheaf. She had even had her hair redone, a sort of half-short in back, with two glistening curls over each temple. And it was treated so that it looked golder than ever. It just shone. But this was best of all. To be sure, the palace of Lord Stetton wasn't as grand and lavish as the theaters, or as mysterious and historical as the old Palace of the Mule, of which so far they had only glimpsed the lonely towers in their air flight across the planet. But imagine, a real lord. She was wrapped in the glory of it. And not only that, she was actually face to face with his mistress. Arcadia capitalized the word in her mind, because she knew the role such women had played in history, knew their glamour and power. In fact, she had often thought of being an all-powerful and glittering creature herself, but somehow mistresses weren't in fashion at the Foundation just then, and besides, her father probably wouldn't let her if it came to that. Of course, the Lady Calia didn't quite come up to Arcadia's notion of the part. For one thing, she was rather plump, and didn't look at all wicked and dangerous, just sort of faded and nearsighted. Her voice was high, too, instead of throaty, and Calia said, "Would you like more tea, child? I'll have another cup, thank you, Your Grace. Or was it Your Highness?" Arcadia continued with a connoisseur's condescension. "Those are lovely pearls you're wearing, my lady." On the whole, my lady seemed best. "Oh, do you think so?" Calia seemed vaguely pleased. She removed them and let them swing milkily to and fro. "Would you like them? You can have them if you like." "Oh, my! You really mean—" She found them in her hand. Then, repelling them mournfully, she said, "Father wouldn't like it." "He wouldn't like the pearls. But they're quite nice pearls." "He wouldn't like my taking them, I mean. You're not supposed to take expensive presents from people, he says." "You aren't. I mean, this was a present to me from the First Citizen. Was that wrong, do you suppose?" Arcadia reddened. I didn't mean—" But Calia had tired of the subject. She let the pearl slide to the ground and said, "You were going to tell me about the Foundation. Please do so right now." And Arcadia was suddenly at a loss. What does one say about a world dulled to tears? To her, the Foundation was a suburban town, a comfortable house, the annoying necessities of education, the uninteresting eternities of a quiet life. She said uncertainly, "It's just like you view in the book films, I suppose." "Oh, do you view book films? They give me such a headache when I try. But do you know, I always love video stories about your traitors. Such big, savage men. It's always so exciting. Is your friend Mr. Munn one of them? He doesn't seem nearly savage enough. Most of the traders had beards and big bass voices and were so domineering with women. Don't you think so?" Arcadia smiled glassily. "That's just a part of history, my lady. I mean, when the Foundation was young, the traders were the pioneers, pushing back the frontiers and bringing civilization to the rest of the galaxy. We learned all about that in school. But that time has passed. We don't have traders anymore, just corporations and things. Really? What a shame. Then what does Mr. Mun do? I mean, if he's not a trader. Uncle Homier's a librarian. Kalia put a hand to her lips and tittered. You mean he takes care of book filths? Oh, my. It seems like such a silly thing for a grown man to do. He's a very good librarian, my lady. It is an occupation that is very highly regarded at the Foundation. She put down the little iridescent teacup upon the milky metal table surface. Her hostess was all concern. But, my dear child, I'm sure I didn't mean to offend you. He must be a very intelligent man. I could see it in his eyes as soon as I looked at him. They were so intelligent. And he must be brave, too, to want to see the Mule's Palace. Brave? Arcadia's internal awareness twitched. This was what she was waiting for. Intrigue, intrigue. With great indifference, she asked, staring idly at her thumb tip. Why must one be brave to wish to see the Mule's Palace? Didn't you know? Her eyes were round, and her voice sank. There's a curse on it. When he died, the Mule directed that no one ever enter it until the Empire of the Galaxy is established. Nobody on Kalgan would dare even to enter the grounds. Arcadia absorbed that. But that's superstition. Don't say that. Kalia was distressed. Poochie always says that. He says it's useful to say it isn't, though, in order to maintain his hold over the people. But I notice he's never gone in himself. And neither did Thalos, who was first citizen before Poochie. A thought struck her, and she was all curiosity again. But why does Mr. Mun want to see the palace? And it was there that Arcadia's careful plan could be put into action. She knew well from the book she had read that a ruler's mistress was the real power behind the throne, that she was the very wellspring of influence. Therefore, if Uncle Homier failed with Lord Stettin, and she was sure he would, she must retrieve that failure with Lady Kalia. To be sure, Lady Kalia was something of a puzzle. She didn't seem at all bright. But, well, all history proved. She said, "There's a reason, my lady, but will you keep it in confidence?" "Cross my heart," said Kalia, making the appropriate gesture on the soft, billowing whiteness of her breast. Arcadia's thoughts kept a sentence ahead of her words. "Uncle Homier is a great authority on the Mule, you know. He's written books and books about it, and he thinks that all of galactic history has been changed since the Mule conquered the Foundation. Oh, my! He thinks the Selden Plan..." Kalia clapped her hands. "I know about the Selden Plan. The videos about the traitors were always all about the Selden Plan. It was supposed to arrange to have the Foundation win all the time. Science had something to do with it, though I could never quite see how. I always get so restless when I have to listen to explanations. But you go right ahead, my dear. It's different when you explain. You make everything seem so clear." Arcadia continued, "Well, don't you see, then, that when the Foundation was defeated by the Mule, the Selden Plan didn't work, and it hasn't worked since. So who will form the Second Empire?" "The Second Empire? Yes, one must be formed someday, but how? That's the problem, you see. And there's the Second Foundation." "The Second Foundation?" She was quite completely lost. "Yes, they're the planners of history that are following in the footsteps of Selden. They stopped the Mule because he was premature, but now they may be supporting Kalgan." "Why?" "Because Kalgan may now offer the best chance of being the nucleus for a new empire." Dimly, Lady Kalia seemed to grasp that. "You mean Poochie is going to make a new empire?" "We can't tell for sure. Uncle Homier thinks so, but he'll have to see the Mule's records to find out." "It's all very complicated," said Lady Kalia doubtfully. Arcadia gave up. She had done her best. Lord Stettin was in a more or less savage humor. The session with the milksop from the Foundation had been quite unrewarding. It had been worse. It had been embarrassing. To be absolute ruler of 27 worlds, master of the galaxy's greatest military machine, owner of the universe's most vaulting ambition, and left to argue nonsense with an antiquarian. Damnation! He was to violate the customs of Calgan, was he? To allow the Mule's Palace to be ransacked so that a fool could write another book? The cause of science, the sacredness of knowledge. Great galaxy! Were these catchwords to be thrown in his face in all seriousness? Besides, and his flesh prickled slightly, there was the matter of the curse. He didn't believe in it. No intelligent man could. But if he was going to defy it, it would have to be for a better reason than any the fool had advanced. "What do you want?" he snapped, and Lady Calia cringed visibly in the doorway.
"Are you busy?"
"Yes, I am busy."
"But nobody's here, Poochie. Couldn't I even speak to you for a minute?"
"Oh, Galaxy, what do you want? Now hurry!" Her words stumbled. "The little girl told me they were going into the Mule's Palace. I thought we could go with her. It must be gorgeous inside." "She told you that, did she? Well, she isn't, and we aren't. Now go tend to your own business. I've had about enough of you."
"But, Poochie, why not? Aren't you going to let them? The little girl said that you were going to make an empire."
"I don't care what she's..." "What was that?" He strode to Calia and caught her firmly above the elbow, so that his fingers sank deeply into the soft flesh. "What did she tell you?"
"You're hurting me. I can't remember what she said, if you're going to look at me like that."
He released her, and she stood there for a moment, rubbing vainly at the red marks. She whimpered.
"The little girl made me promise not to tell."
"That's too bad. Tell me, now."
"Well, she said the Selden plan was changed, and that there was another foundation somewheres that was arranging to have you make an empire, that's all. She said Mr. Munn was a very important scientist, and that the Mule's Palace would have proof of all that. That's every bit of what she said. Are you angry?"
But Stetton did not answer. He left the room, hurriedly, with Calia's cow-like eyes staring mournfully after him. Two orders were sent out over the official seal of the First Citizen before the hour was up. One had the effect of sending 500 ships of the line into space on what were officially to be termed as war games. The other had the effect of throwing a single man into confusion. Homier Munn ceased his preparations to leave when that second order reached him. It was, of course, official permission to enter the Palace of the Mule. He read and reread it with anything but joy. But Arcadia was delighted. She knew what had happened. Or at any rate, she thought she did. Chapter 14. Anxiety. Polly placed the breakfast on the table, keeping one eye on the table news recorder, which quietly disgorged the bulletins of the day. It could be done easily enough without loss of efficiency, this one-eye-absent business. Since all items of food were sterilely packed in containers, which served as discardable cooking units, her duties vis-à-vis breakfast consisted of nothing more than choosing the menu, placing the items on the table, and removing the residue thereafter. She clacked her tongue at what she saw, and moaned softly in retrospect. "Oh, people are so wicked," she said, and Daryl merely hemmed in reply. Her voice took on the high-pitched rasp which she automatically assumed when about to bewail the evil of the world. "Now, why do these terrible Calganese," she accented the second syllable and gave it a long A, "do like that? You'd think they'd give a body peace, but no, it's just trouble, trouble all the time. Now look at that headline. Mobs riot before Foundation Consulate. Oh, would I like to give them a piece of my mind if I could. That's the trouble with people. They just don't remember. They just don't remember. Dr. Darrell got no memory at all. Look at the last war after the Mule died. Of course, I was just a little girl then, and oh, the fuss and trouble. My own uncle was killed, him being just in his 20s and only 2 years married with a baby girl. I remember him even yet, blonde hair he had and a dimple in his chin. I have a tri-dimensional cube of him somewheres. And now his baby girl has a son of her own in the Navy, and most like if anything happens. And we had the bombardment patrols and all the old men taking turns in the stratospheric defense. I could imagine what they would have been able to do if the Calganese had come that far. My mother used to tell us children about the food rationing and the prices and the taxes. A body could hardly make ends meet. You'd think if they had sense, people would just never want to start it again, just have nothing to do with it. And I suppose it's not people that do it, either. I suppose even Calganese would rather sit at home with their families and not go fooling around in ships and getting killed. It's that awful man Stetton. It's a wonder people like that are let live.
He kills the old man, what's his name, Thallos, and now he's just spoiling to be boss of everything. And why he wants to fight us, I don't know. He's bound to lose, like they always do. Maybe it's all in the plan, but sometimes I'm sure it must be a wicked plan to have so much fighting and killing in it. Though to be sure, I haven't a word to say about Harry Seldon, who I'm sure knows much more about that than I do, and perhaps I'm a fool to question him. And the other Foundation is as much to blame. They could stop Calgan now and make everything fine. They'll do it anyway in the end, and you'd think they'd do it before there's any damage done. Dr. Darrell looked up. Did you say something, Polly? Polly's eyes widened, then narrowed angrily. Nothing, Doctor. Nothing at all. I haven't got a word to say. A body could as soon choke to death as say a word in this house. It's jump here and jump there, but just try to say a word. And she went off simmering. Her leaving made as little impression on Darrell as did her speaking. Calgan. Nonsense. A merely physical enemy. These had always been beaten. Yet he could not divorce himself of the current foolish crisis. 7 days earlier, the mayor had asked him to be administrator of research and development. He had promised to answer today. Well, he stirred uneasily. Why himself? Yet could he refuse? It would seem strange, and he dared not seem strange. After all, what did he care about Calgan? To him, there was only one enemy, always had been. While his wife had lived, he was only too glad to shirk the task, to hide. Those long, quiet days on Trantor, with the ruins of the past about them, the silence of a wrecked world and the forgetfulness of it all. But she had died. Less than 5 years, all told, it had been. And after that, he knew that he could live only by fighting that vague and fearful enemy that deprived him of the dignity of manhood by controlling his destiny, that made life a miserable struggle against a foreordained end, that made all the universe a hateful and deadly chess game. Call it sublimation. He himself did call it that. But the fight gave meaning to his life. First to the University of Santani, where he had joined Dr. Cleese. It had been 5 years well spent. And yet Cleese was merely a gatherer of data. He could not succeed in the real task. And when Darrell had felt that as certainty, he knew it was time to leave. Cleese may have worked in secret, yet he had to have men working for him and with him. He had subjects whose brains he probed. He had a university that backed him. All these were weaknesses. Cleese could not understand that, and he, Darrell, could not explain that. They parted enemies. It was well. They had to. He had to leave in surrender, in case someone watched. Where Cleese worked with charts, Darrell worked with mathematical concepts in the recesses of his mind. Cleese worked with many, Darrell with none. Cleese in a university, Darrell in the quiet of a suburban house. And he was almost there. A second Foundationer is not human as far as his cerebrum is concerned. The cleverest psychologist, the most subtle neurochemist, might detect nothing. Yet the difference must be there. And since the difference was one of the mind, it was there that it must be detectable. Given a man like the mule, and there was no doubt that the second Foundationers had the mule's powers, whether inborn or acquired, with the power of detecting and controlling human emotions, deduce from that the electronic circuit required, and deduce from that the last details of the encephalograph on which it could not help but be betrayed. And now Cleese had returned into his life in the person of his ardent young pupil, Anthor. Folly. Folly. With his graphs and charts of people who had been tampered with, he had learned to detect that years ago, but of what use was it? He wanted the arm, not the tool. Yet he had to agree to join Anthor, since it was the quieter course. Just as now he would become administrator of research and development. It was the quieter course. And so he remained a conspiracy within a conspiracy. The thought of Arcadia teased him for a moment, and he shuddered away from it. Left to himself, it would never have happened. Left to himself, no one would ever have been endangered but himself. Left to himself, he felt the anger rising against the dead Cleese, the living Anthor, all the well-meaning fools. Well, she could take care of herself. She was a very mature little girl. She could take care of herself. It was a whisper in his mind. Yet could she? At the moment that Dr. Darrell told himself mournfully that she could, she was sitting in the coldly austere anteroom of the executive offices of the First Citizen of the Galaxy. For half an hour she had been sitting there, her eyes sliding slowly about the walls. There had been two armed guards at the door when she had entered with Homer Munn. They hadn't been there the other times. She was alone now, yet she sensed the unfriendliness of the very furnishings of the room, and for the first time. Now, why should that be? Homer was with Lord Stetton. Well, was that wrong? It made her furious. In similar situations, in the book films and the videos, the hero foresaw the conclusion, was prepared for it when it came. And she just sat there. Anything could happen. Anything. And she just sat there. Well, back again. Think it back. Maybe something would come. For 2 weeks, Homer had nearly lived inside the Mule's palace. He had taken her once, with Stetton's permission. It was large and gloomily massive, shrinking from the touch of life to lie sleeping within its ringing memories, answering the footsteps with a hollow boom or a savage clatter. She hadn't liked it. Better the great gay highways of the capital city, the theaters and spectacles of a world essentially poorer than the Foundation, yet spending more of its wealth on display. Homer would return in the evening, awed. "It's a dream world for me," he would whisper. "If I could only chip the palace down stone by stone, layer by layer of the aluminum sponge, if I could carry it back to Terminus, what a museum it would make." He seemed to have lost that early reluctance. He was eager instead, glowing. Arcadia knew that by the one sure sign. He practically never stuttered throughout that period. One time he said, "There are abstracts of the records of General Pritcher. I know him. He was the Foundation renegade who combed the galaxy for the second Foundation, wasn't he?" "Not exactly a renegade, Arcady. The Mule had converted him." "Oh, it's the same thing." "Galaxy, that combing you speak of was a hopeless task. The original records of the Selden Convention that established both Foundations 500 years ago make only one reference to the second Foundation. They say it's located at the other end of the galaxy at Star's End. That's all the Mule and Pritcher had to go on. They had no method of recognizing the second Foundation, even if they found it. What madness! They have records," he was speaking to himself, but Arcadia listened eagerly, "which must cover nearly 1,000 worlds. Yet the number of worlds available for study must have been closer to 1,000,000. And we are no better off," Arcadia broke in anxiously. "Shh!" in a tight hiss. Homer froze and slowly recovered. "Let's not talk," he mumbled. And now Homer was with Lord Stetton, and Arcadia waited outside alone and felt the blood squeezing out of her heart for no reason at all. That was more frightening than anything else, that there seemed no reason. On the other side of the door, Homer, too, was living in a sea of gelatin. He was fighting, with furious intensity, to keep from stuttering, and, of course, could scarcely speak 2 consecutive words clearly as a result. Lord Stetton was in full uniform, 6'6", large-jawed and hard-mouthed. His bald, arrogant fists kept a powerful time to his sentences. "Well, you have had 2 weeks, and you come to me with tales of nothing. Come, sir, tell me the worst. Is my navy to be cut to ribbons? Am I to fight the ghosts of the Second Foundation as well as the men of the First? I repeat, my lord, I am no predictor. I am at a complete loss. Or do you wish to go back to warn your countrymen? To deep space with your play-acting. I want the truth, or I'll have it out of you along with half your guts. I'm telling only the truth, and I'll have you remember, my lord, that I am a citizen of the Foundation. You cannot touch me without harvesting more than you count on." The Lord of Kalgan laughed uproariously. "A threat to frighten children! A horror with which to beat back an idiot! Come, Mr. Munn, I have been patient with you. I have listened to you for 20 minutes while you detailed wearisome nonsense to me, which must have cost you sleepless nights to compose. It was wasted effort. I know you are here not merely to rake through the Mule's dead ashes and to warm over the cinders you find. You come here for more than you have admitted. Is that not true?" Homer Munn could no more have quenched the burning horror that grew in his eyes than at that moment he could have breathed. Lord Stetton saw that, and clapped the Foundation man upon his shoulder, so that he and the chair he sat on reeled under the impact. Good. Now let us be frank. You are investigating the Selden plan. You know that it no longer holds. You know, perhaps, that I am the inevitable winner now. I and my heirs. Well, man, what matters it who established the Second Empire so long as it is established? History plays no favorites, huh? Are you afraid to tell me? You see that I know your mission. Mun said thickly, What is it you want? Your presence. I would not wish the plan spoiled through overconfidence. You understand more of these things than I do. You can detect small flaws that I might miss. Come, you will be rewarded in the end. You will have your fair glut of the loot. What can you expect at the Foundation? To turn the tide of a perhaps inevitable defeat? To lengthen the war? Or is it merely a patriotic desire to die for your country? He finally spluttered into silence. Not a word would come. You will stay, said the Lord of Kalgan confidently. You have no choice. Wait, an almost forgotten afterthought. I have information to the effect that your niece is of the family of Beta Daryl. Homer uttered a startled, Yes. He could not trust himself at this point to be capable of weaving anything but cold truth. Is it a family of note on the Foundation? Homer nodded. To whom they would certainly brook no harm. Harm? Don't be a fool, man. I am meditating the reverse. How old is she? 14. So? Well, not even the Second Foundation or Harry Selden himself could stop time from passing or girls from becoming women. With that, he turned on his heel and strode to a draped door, which he threw open violently. He thundered, What in space have you dragged your shivering carcass here for? The Lady Kalia blinked at him and said in a small voice, I didn't know anyone was with you. Well, there is. I'll speak to you later of this, but now I want to see your back, and quickly. Her footsteps were a fading scurry in the corridor. Stetton returned. She is a remnant of an interlude that has lasted too long. It will end soon. 14, you say? Homer stared at him with a brand new horror. Arcadia started at the noiseless opening of a door, jumping at the jangling sliver of movement it made in the corner of her eye. The finger that crooked frantically at her met no response for long moments, and then, as if in response to the cautions enforced by the very sight of that white trembling figure, she tiptoed her way across the floor. Their footsteps were a taut whisper in the corridor. It was the Lady Kalia, of course, who held her hand so tightly that it hurt, and for some reason she did not mind following her. Of the Lady Kalia, at least, she was not afraid. Now, why was that? They were in a boudoir now, all pink fluff and spun sugar. Lady Kalia stood with her back against the door. She said, This was our private way to me, to my room, you know, from his office. His, you know. And she pointed with a thumb, as though even the thought of him were grinding her soul to death with fear. It's so lucky, it's so lucky. Her pupils had blackened out the blue with their size. Can you tell me, began Arcadia timidly, and Kalia was in frantic motion. No, child, no, there is no time. Take off your clothes, please, please. I'll get you more, and they won't recognize you. She was in the closet, throwing useless bits of flumery in reckless heaps upon the ground, looking madly for something a girl could wear without becoming a living invitation to dalliance. Here, this will do. It will have to. You have money. Here, take it all. And this. She was stripping her ears and fingers. Just go home. Go home to your Foundation. This book is continued on cassette number 6.